On Point is a production of WBUR Boston and NPR.
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Asbrook, and this is On Point.
Well, I went to the river and I couldn't get across. Jumping a bag because I thought it was a horse who rode him over. Give me Coca-Cola, lemon soda, salt of ice cream.
Lyle Lovett breaks the mold or makes his own. You think he's one thing, country, Texas, and then that he's that and a whole lot more. Came up on an old family place outside Houston, broke onto the music scene in the 1980s, made his own way ever since. Blues, folk, country, gospel, bluegrass, jazz, and his own sly thing that's hard to put in any category, and why try? He's out with a new album, the last with his longtime record label. Lyle Lovett is a free man. This hour on Point, Lyle Lovett and his new album, Release Me. You can join the conversation, what do you hear in the music, the story of Lyle Lovett. We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. And you can comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Lyle Lovett joins us today from Houston, Texas. He grew up outside the city on a country place. His family settled in 1848, took guitar lessons as a boy in the city, wrote songs in college, lives on the place where he grew up. 15 albums behind him now, 4 Grammys. His new album, Release Me, is his last with his longtime recording label, Curb Lost Highway. Sidelines as an actor, we'll ask him about that. In 2011, he was named Texas State Musician. Lyle Lovett, welcome. Thanks very much for joining us.
Tom, thanks for having me on the show.
It's really nice to have you here. What are your duties as Texas State Musician, Mr. Lovett?
that deal is part of the Texas Commission on the Arts, and it actually is a PR opportunity for the Texas Commission on the Arts to call attention and gain public support for the arts being taught in schools. That really is the point of it. There's a three-dimensional artist that they name Artist of the Year. Mm-hmm. There's a two-dimensional artist they name Artist of the Year. They always name a poet laureate. And then they name a musician of the year. And it really is all designed to underscore the importance of arts education.
Well, that's great. Good for them. But I want to ask a little more about you and Texas and that relationship over time. But let's hear a little bit off your new album as we do that. Here's the title track from Lyle Lovett's latest, Release Me, here with K.D. Lang. Release Me from Lyle Lovett's latest album of the same name. There with K.D. Lang. What's it like to sing with K.D., Lyle?
Gosh, K.D. is just one of the best singers in the entire world, and you know, it's a thrill to sing. We actually sang that together. I mean, it wasn't an overdub. She and I sang it live together.
Sounds great. You've got a bunch of covers on here, some of your own original stuff as well. Now, when you listen to this, is there a Lyle Lovett spin on this? Would this be out of place in any Texas roadhouse in the last half century, or would it just be
different? And in fact, I was we tried to listen to the Ray Price version from the 50s of this song, and with the idea of making it sound authentic in that roadhouse sort of way, in the dance hall kind of way. I grew up going to, my parents loved to dance, and as a boy I would go with them, accompany them to on a Saturday evening out at dance halls around home in North Harris County in Texas, and this was one of the songs that always got played.
Always. I remember it so well from childhood as well. I love the way you lean into that tradition and then you can lean away from it as well. I mean, you titled this album Release Me. You're all bound up in rope on the front.
Well, you know, it was hard to be, this being my last record for Curb and for the Universal Music Group.
Yeah.
It was hard to resist sort of making a joke about it and also actually, you know, to call attention to the fact that that I've been with the same. I'm awfully proud of having worked with these two companies for the last 26 years, and just to let folks know that something different might happen.
Off you go. I mean, not being in the music business, I wanted to ask you about this. Does it mean is it some big deal to be out of that contract now, that long relationship, and off? You know, did they require you, I don't know, to wear a certain kind of clothes, to make a certain kind of music? Is there some obligation beyond just the contractual? Is there some artistic confinement that you've been in?
Oh, there's certainly not. There's never been any artistic confinement. In fact, it's quite the opposite of that. Having worked initially with Tony Brown at MCA Records in Nashville, Tony was, he was the fellow that signed Steve Earle to his record deal back in the mid-'80s, and Nancy Griffith, and was, you know, he was well regarded as an artist's A&R person at the record company, and really took chances on us and gave us our start, and was always very supportive creatively in terms of my picking the songs for my record or records. I did the first three records with him, and was instrumental in helping me get my record deal moved from MCA in Nashville to MCA in Los Angeles back in 1989, because he thought they could do a better job marketing me out in Los Angeles. So that's really the record company has always been very creatively supportive. I'm just proud of having been with them for all these. You know, in more conventional businesses,
it doesn't happen much anymore.
Well, you might get a watch, after 25 or 30 years.
Right.
I'm just really letting people know that, that it happened.
John Hagen writes of Lyle Lovett, says he crosses so many genres, it falls in the cracks. It's not country, it's not jazz or blues, it's not rock and roll, it's not strictly swing, but it's all of those things. There is no word for his style. Here's another cut off his latest album. It's called The Girl with the Holiday Smile.
I met a hooker at the grocery store. She wasn't bad looking, she's a pretty little horse. Whoa, whoa, she's a girl with a holiday smile. She told me, Merry Christmas and peace to you. She said, I've been working this whole night. Whoa, whoa, I'm the girl with the holiday smile.
The girl with the holiday smile, Lyle Lovett there. Opening line, I met a hooker at the grocery store. And I see here, Lyle, you wrote that in 1978. What's that been doing hanging out in your notebook for
it's
all
true.
These
you know,
years?
And I played it a few times over the years, but just not very often, and thought this might be a good time to do it. It was it wasn't actually a grocery store. It was a convenience store, it was too multi-layered to factor in. So, but it was an observational experience.
But in 1978, you were 20 years old.
Yeah, no, that's right. Yeah, and I was, I was doing my best to make up songs.
I'm not sure people understand just how early you started writing songs. Were you still in college then? Were you out when you wrote this?
No, I was still in college. I was still in school. You know, my parents both went to. I'm talking to you today from the University of Houston studios, and my parents both went to school here at the University of Houston. Went to night school, in fact. I was able to attend both of their college graduations and remember them quite well. We were all very excited, getting an education was really important to me because it was important to my parents, and being in school was a great way to feel like I was doing something productive in a conventional way, but afforded me lots of opportunity to play music at the same time. Those were great years for me.
Sure. People talk about your country roots, but to me, especially thinking back to the 70s, I'm hearing Randy Newman here a lot more than Roadhouse.
Well, you know, I certainly am a great admirer of Randy Newman, and listening to his songs, it was one of the things that taught me it's okay to have a sense of humor in a song.
We're glad you've had it, and we're glad you've got it, and we're really glad you're with us today. We want to listen to a lot more music off this album, and we want to really dig in with you, Lyle. It's great to have you there in Houston. We're talking today with the singular Texas singer-songwriter Lyle Lovett about life and song and, we hope, horses and home a little more maybe, and his new album, Release Me. He joins us today from Houston, Texas, and you can join the conversation. Are you a Lyle Lovett fan? How'd he grab you? What drew you in? Did he sneak up on you? Did you think he was country? And then he was more. What's the Lovett treatment, the Lovett trademark? Stand by there in Houston, Lyle. Here's Isn't That So off of the new album, Release Me, written by Jesse Winchester, 1973. You can join us, 800-423-8255, 800-423-TALK. Lyle Lovett from Houston with us today. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. Tom Ashbrook, this is On Point. We're talking this hour with singer-songwriter Lyle Lovett. He joins us today from Houston, Texas, not far from his home where he grew up, where he studied guitar. You can join the conversation today. You know his music? Are you a fan? What's the Lovett treatment, his trademark? And he's free now from his longtime label. What do you want Lyle Lovett to do next? Do you envy his setup, a great musical career, and all the roots of home and family? We'll look at those. 800-423-8255 is our number, 800-423-TALK. Behind us right here, Garfield's Blackberry Blossom. Boy, that sounds terrific. And Sharon calling from Concord, Massachusetts. Sharon, you're on the air with Lyle Lovett.
Terrific. Mr. Lovett, we have been a huge fan of yours, as most of your fans have been for years. I'm from Oklahoma, and our roots are deep with you. We had our song play at our wedding, and we named our first son Jackson Lyle after you.
All right. Well, thanks, Sharon.
You are very welcome. We are quite honored to call him Jackson Lyle when he's in trouble. So I just wanted to let you know that you have been an inspiration to me, to my friends, to my family, and your fiddlers and you are so amazing that my goal is to fiddle at my 50th birthday. So I am taking right now just basic violin lessons to try to fiddle like your fiddlers do.
Well, that's terrific, Sharon. I hope you enjoy it.
So I just wanted to let you know that you mean a lot to our family, to my friends, and I just want you to keep doing what you're doing.
Well, that's sure nice of you to say, Sharon, but yeah, that's terrific that you're taking up fiddle, and it sounds to me like you've got lots of years to practice before that birthday.
not that many, but that's all right.
Sharon, thanks for that call. Lyle, tell us about this, the musicians that back you up. I mean, I listen to a lot of music. We get sent a lot of music. You know, very often you can put it on, and in 2, 3, 4, 5 seconds, you can sort of hear whether it's got that real command and competence or not. You put on something like this, Garfield's Blackberry Blossom. I mean, you know from the first note that it is there, it's on. Who's playing here, and how do you put the sound together?
You know, that was one of the things that I wanted to do with this record, was really reflect the sense of community that exists in playing music. I record with a lot of the guys that I play live with, and these players this track features a couple of young players that I've been working with the last several years, Luke Bulla on fiddle, and Keith Sewell playing mandolin and acoustic guitar. They're wonderful acoustic musicians, and I just am privileged to work with them. They actually brought this tune. I heard them playing this tune this summer in the dressing room, and they told me they learned it from Sarah Watkins. And so I said, well, we need to work that up. And we started doing it as the first song in our first tune in our show. We typically open our shows with an instrumental. And so this past summer, in fact, the very first place we played it was in Hyannis at the Melody Tent.
Oh, just in Massachusetts, our backyard here.
Or it was actually, you know what? It was the night before in Cohasset.
Then
the next night in Hyannis. But, right on the eve of Hurricane Irene rolling through.
Yeah.
And so we're excited to play it. And I love getting to feature the guys in the band like this on my records.
Well, it backs everything up really beautifully. Let's get your voice in there. Here's Lyle Lovett from the album with White Boy Lost in the Blues. This is Michael Frank's song from 1973. Singing here, Lyle with Arnold McCullough on harmony vocals.
You bought your six-string guitar. You bought your great big amp to sing like Muddy Waters and play like lightning sound. But now that we bought our heart, you're feeling mean and blue. We got your chain to your earphones. You're just a white boy lost in the blues.
We got you chained to your earphones. You're just a white boy lost in the blues. Off Release Me. Greg's calling from Lake Worth, Florida. Hi, Greg. You're on the air with Lyle Lovett.
Hi. How are you doing?
Great,
Greg. How are you?
Excellent. I'm a fan of all different styles of music raised on country. I love hard rock. I love John Prime and everything in between. And Lyle, your music just fits right in there with, a little bit of everything I like with real strong songwriting.
Thank you, Greg.
What inspired me to call was a friend of mine gave me as a Christmas present the Guy Clark tribute album, and your track on there, Anyhow I Love You, I have listened to it so many times because it's just very infectious for me to hear, and I just feel so good listening to that your version of that song, and it just inspired me to call and to say that to you.
Well, that's really nice of you, Greg. I felt so honored to get to be part of that tribute project to Guy Clark. Guy Clark is one of my songwriting heroes and one of my personal heroes as well. If it hadn't been for Guy Clark putting in a word for me all around Nashville back in the mid '80s, I might not have had a career. And so I admire his songwriting, but mainly, or just as much, appreciate his friendship and everything he's done for me. I recorded a Guy Clark song years ago, back in 1998, called "Step Inside This House," which was the first song Guy ever wrote. Mm-hmm. And after we recorded, I asked Guy if it was okay to record it, and he said yes. And I called him up and I said, "I sure hope we didn't mess it up, Guy." And he said there was a pause on the phone. And he said, "Man, you can't mess up one of my songs." and that's the truth. His songs are so well-written and so well-crafted. It's just a privilege to get to sing one of them.
Hey, Greg, thanks for your call. Lyle, could you describe, if you go back to those years, late 70s, you're writing songs, a young man in college, you've got perspective on it now. Looking back, how did you figure out, that you had something, and then how did you figure out how sort of singular or unique it could be? What was it in the way people responded? Did you think you would go into some mold? Did you know right away you were going to be sort of your own cat? How did you know what your path was going to look like? Or did you have any idea?
Well, certainly, perspective is much, much easier to apply in hindsight. Mm-hmm. But at the time, really, it was a matter of trying. I do remember thinking there needs to be there has to be a reason that someone would want to come hear me. And so, I can't do just the same thing that somebody else is doing. Mm-hmm. I have to sort of fit in between things that already exist. And so that was a thought that I that you know that I held in the sort of in the forefront of my approach always, and even in doing songs by Guy Clark and Townes Van Zandt, I always thought to myself, you know, I need to write my own songs because, you know, I'm probably not a good enough singer or a good enough guitar player so that people would come to hear me just to sing, or hear me just to play guitar. And so I thought, well, I need to offer something that you know they can't get anywhere else. And I kept coming back to just point of view and the songwriters that we're talking about all had Guy Clark and Randy Newman, who you mentioned before, mm-hmm. always had very strong points of view. And I learned from listening to their songs that that was important, and that it was okay to have your own point of view.
Did that just come naturally? I mean, you know, we look at you, and you've got this famous look, very lanky, very craggy. There's no mistaking you for somebody else, and it makes me wonder, you know, were you a singular kind of kid? Were you off on your own moonbeam, or were you just out there wrestling around with everybody and had to sort of strive to find that unique voice?
Well, you know, I think we're all individuals, and as much alike as we all are, we're that much different from one another. And so it's not really a matter of having to try to be different. Mm-hmm. It's just a matter of just, you know, being yourself and you know, standing up there. And that's really all I tried to do.
Let's hear more. Here's Night's Lullaby. This is an original song by Lyle Lovett off of Release Me.
The Sandman is calling, your eyelids are falling like stars and shooting out of the sky. The dewdrops, they glisten as we lie here and listen to the sound of the night's lullaby. Sleep tight.
Lyle Lovett's Night's Lullaby. Lyle, tell us about this. I think you wrote this for a Shakespeare production that you were in.
Yeah, well, that's exactly right. Shakespeare Center Los Angeles started and has been run by a wonderful gentleman named Ben Donenberg. And Ben invited me and Sean and Sarah Watkins to be part of the band in a production of Much Ado About Nothing. In December of 2010, we adapted some of Shakespeare's lyrics to tunes that we could play, and Ben asked me to do several of my songs in the show, and then asked me to write a song to end the first act, so that ended up being it. I got to come to a few run through performances and watch, and
was the whole thing Much Ado About Nothing? Was it put in a country vein, or was it just this element?
You know, it was set in Ben Donenberg's mission in life seems to be making Shakespeare accessible, and in fact, the company logo is no tights. It's a pair of tights on a sign with the international no sign symbol through it, so this was set in a winery in post World War II California, mm-hmm. Yeah, we were kind of, sort of dressed like characters you might see on the Roy Rogers show, sort of standing in the background playing everything.
Yeah, that's great. No Ado About Tights. Karen in Columbia, South Carolina. Karen, you're on the air with Lyle Lovett. Hello, Karen.
Hey, Karen.
You picked the best backup singers in the world.
You know, Sean and Sarah Watkins are... to call them backup singers really would diminish, everything they've done. I mean, they're wonderful singers and artists in their own right. I met Sean and Sarah back in 1999. We toured with a band that they were in at the time called Nickel Creek, mm-hmm. and we spent a whole summer together and got to be friends and stayed in touch. And that's one of the things that I really am trying to call attention to in the artists that helped me with this album. These were all people that I've gotten to know over the years. These are all real relationships. You know, these people mm-hmm. are friends of mine, and it just feels really special to me that they would be willing to help me, you know, with my recording.
You definitely have some great musicians here. There's one track I wanted to play. It's from Chuck Berry, of course, the great African-American rock and roll pioneer, called Brown-Eyed Handsome Man. It's got a kind of political resonance right now. Remind us what he was writing about in 1956 here, Lyle. This is Brown-Eyed Handsome Man. What was Chuck Berry seeing?
Chuck Berry was such a musical force, you know, and mm-hmm. such an important musical inspiration. Oftentimes his lyrics are, I think, you know, not given the credit they deserve. This version of Brown-Eyed Handsome Man slows down the music and really concentrates on the lyrics. He's telling us not to judge a book by its cover, I think.
You said he was touring in black and Latino California and didn't see too many blue eyes, but he saw an arrest going on of this brown-eyed handsome man. Brown-Eyed Man slowed down. You know, this has got a certain feeling of currency right now with all the Trayvon Martin talk going on. I saw one reviewer listen to this and said, you know, it feels especially timely right now. You know, you'd be arrested on charges of unemployment. I don't really know your politics. What are they, Lyle Lovett? I don't hear much about them.
I think... art, actually. I mean, if we're going to call mm-hmm. songwriting and performing art.
We will.
I think art, you know, should transcend politics. I think art should maintain its objectivity, and mm-hmm. Writers should, people who are trying to write in an artistic way, should maintain some objectivity so that they can comment on things. And so I think to be overly partisan as an artist is to limit your expression.
Have you, all right then, objectively...
That's why you haven't heard much about my politics.
Fair enough. Objectively speaking, with this on your album and Trayvon Martin in the news, do you think about a connection between the two?
Well, I think, I think that human nature is such that we are oftentimes judgmental of people who are different from the way we are, on both sides of, or all sides of any sort of difference. Mm-hmm. And I think it's just so important for us all to regard one another as individuals and as important, one person being as important as the next, regardless of his color of his eyes. And mm-hmm. I think it's really important to look at one another with an ambition toward fairness and compassion.
Lyle Lovett, please stand by there in Houston, covering there Chuck Berry, African-American greats, A Brown-Eyed Handsome Man. And here, covering One Way Gal, it's written in 1928 by African-American blues singer William Moore. Listeners, you can join us. Are you a Lyle Lovett fan? How did he grab you? What drew you in? Did he sneak up on you? Did you think he was country? And then he was more. 800-423-8255 is our number. 800-423-TALK. Lyle, it's great to have you with us. Stand by there in Houston. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back.
We drank them till the break of day. And one thing I about that gal of mine. One thing I like about that gal of mine. One thing I like about that gal of mine is she treats me right and loves me all the time.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point with Lyle Lovett.
What a pretty mystery you suddenly turned out to be. I've never held you gently, but I want to. Lyle, watch your friends come through the door and I slide my feet across the floor. There are things I might ask, I don't need to.
Singer-songwriter, Texas native Lyle Lovett joins us today from Houston, Texas. He grew up just outside the city on an old family place there. Out with a new album, Release Me. You can join the conversation today, 800-423-8255. 800-423-TALK. The track there, Understand You. Jess is calling from, we got Wendy calling here. Hey, Wendy, you're on the air. Thanks for calling. Hello, Wendy, you're on. Or maybe not. Let's go to Jess in Cambridge. Sorry,
yes.
Lyle. Hey, Jess, you're on.
Hi, I'm a great admirer of your work, and I have been since I was a very little girl. You were the first live concert I ever attended when I was, I don't know, maybe 9 years old. And what inspires me most about your work is the way you tell stories, the way you say less to say more oftentimes, how you don't connect all the dots, and yet you make us, your listeners, feel like insiders. And it's a very delicate thing that you do here. I'm always amazed by it, and I'm wondering how you do it, if there are any particular writers or storytellers or musicians who have inspired or influenced you in this way.
Jeez, oh, gosh, great. Yes. Well, first of all, that's an awfully nice thing for you to say, and thank you for sticking with me for so long. You know, I admire songwriters who do, you know, I try to do what you just said, but, I admire songwriters who do that, songwriters like Guy Clark and Townes Van Zandt and my friend Eric Taylor, whose song that Tom is playing right now. You know, Eric moved to Houston when he was 20 years old from Henry County in Georgia, and Eric was one of the young guys that used to open shows for Towns and for Guy, and getting to go and listen to Eric and getting to know him really made Townes Van Zandt and Guy Clark turn them into real people for me. Took them from being characters into real people, and it helped me to realize that we're all just people, and music and the kinds of stories that they wrote about were really about connecting people, those are the kind of songs that I like, and certainly are the kinds of songs that I continue to aspire to write.
Hey Jess, I really appreciate your call. Let's get one more right here from Colorado, Aspen, Colorado, and Lisa. Lisa, you're on with Lyle Lovett.
Hi, Tom. Hi, Lyle.
Hey, Lisa.
Well, this is unexpected. My sister lives in the Boston area, and she called me a little bit ago, so thanks for having me on.
Sure.
And Lyle, I just wanted to thank you so much for always coming through Aspen, and this last New Year's, I was so impressed with your class and your style, that second performance with such a rowdy crowd.
That was a lot of fun to get to play. we played at the Belly Up Club on the 1st and 2nd of January. Mm. And it was a great, it's always great to be in Colorado and in Aspen but what a beautiful time of year to be there.
Crowd was a little rowdy. What about Mr. Lovett, Lisa?
Well, you know, I've seen you, I think, every time you come through town a mile, and your class and your style you and your musicians that second performance, because there was a lot of distraction in the crowd. And, you know, I just, you don't get to see that very often. You know, someone with your presence, your grace, and your humility, and you guys just kept on going, and I hope you had a, I hope you really did enjoy yourself.
Oh, we did. We had a wonderful time. You know, it
sounds like the beer bottles were flying. I don't know.
It was a lot of. It actually was a lot of fun. It was a very. It was a kind of a raucous crowd, but that, it's fun to play to a crowd like that as well. And you know, sometimes you know, a quieter crowd might allow for a little more conversation back and forth between the audience and the stage, but a rowdy crowd like that gives us the chance to just play, and that's what we like to do. So that's what we did that night, and I just remember it being a fun night.
Elisa and Aspen, thanks very much for your call. Speaking of early January, cold times, even holiday times, you've got a track on here that's just so arresting. You're arresting, and it's a duet with Austin Jessinger, Cat Edmondson. Let's just play it. Everybody will recognize this tune back to Frank Lesser, 1944, but this is a wonderful treatment. Lyle Lovett and Cat Edmondson, Baby It's Cold.
Baby, it's cold outside.
I've got to go away.
Baby, it's cold outside.
This evening has been
hoping that you'd drop
in. So very nice.
I'll hold your hands. They're just like
ice. Mother will start to
beautiful what you're hurt.
My father will be pacing the floor.
Listen to that fireplace roar.
So really, I'd better scurry.
Beautiful, please don't
hurry. But maybe just a half a drink.
Put
more.
Some records on while I pull.
Neighbors might think.
Baby, it's bad.
Lyle, what's in this drink?
No cabs to be had out there.
Lyle Lovett and Cat Edmondson with Baby It's Cold. Now, Lyle, you sound great there, but man, you put on some competition with Cat Edmondson. She really draws the ear. What a voice!
Yeah, Cat's wonderful. I've known Cat for I guess about the last 4 years, and have just become a real fan of hers. And we thought of doing. Cat is not only a great jazz singer, but but also a wonderful songwriter. We thought of, but her knowledge of standards is so deep. We were just trying to think of something we could do together a couple of years ago as we came through Austin to do a show.
Yeah.
And so this was kind of an obvious choice.
Oh, that's terrific. We wanted to talk with her for a while, and you remind us and get us on that case. Brian writes to us online here. He says, what's the process that you go through to decide if you want to do a quiet acoustic album or a large band music or something completely different? How's it work?
Well, I think, you know, it kind of, thanks, Brian. You know, it works different every time, and really it's just a matter of trying to think of songs that will complement one another, and think of sort of, you know, what you're trying to accomplish with an album. And in the case of this album, I was intent on, pointing out relationships that I have with people that I like to work with, and featuring some of my favorite singers and musicians, and certainly Cat Edmondson is one of them.
Oh, she's terrific. Chesapeake, Virginia, Michael, you're on the air with Lyle Lovett. Michael.
Hi, it's an honor to talk to you, Lyle.
Hey, Michael.
I've been a fan of yours since college. I was actually a trained classical musician growing up and majored in that in college, and I was brought to you through a roommate who listened to you all the time, and I got introduced to the Pontiac album and loved your music since, and I'm very happy for that world you opened up for me.
Thank you.
My question for you is more about, as a child, the experiences that led you to the arts. I'm also the artistic director for Young Audiences of Virginia, and as an arts and education enthusiast, I often wonder about the success that you've reached in your field and how your childhood or your arts and education experiences sort of chased that dream or forged that vision.
Well, that's a great question, Michael, and good luck to you in your teaching. You know, it's the arts are so important for so many reasons. But the most basic, I think, is the fun of getting to do something artistic. And I received lots of encouragement from my parents and from my teachers at school. I went to a small Lutheran school, parochial school, where singing was a big part of every day. And I just always loved, you know, getting to sing or learning a harmony and, you know, singing in the choir. But my mom went to a lot of effort to take me to guitar lessons when I was in grade school.
I remember she took you an hour each way.
Exactly. Well, she worked in Houston, and my guitar lesson was in Houston, but that meant she had to come out after work, come back home after work, and, you know, an hour north and pick me up and then take me back into Houston. So she really went to a lot of trouble. And the teachers that I had, you know, the teachers are just so important. You know, you remember your favorite teachers all of your life. And my guitar teacher was, when I was a boy, was a gentleman named Chuck Woods. And he just, you know, made playing guitar fun. He taught me, but we didn't take it so seriously that, you know, I was never in trouble for not practicing 1 week as much as I should have. Mm-hmm. We would just always pick up where we left off. And playing guitar was just something, going to that guitar lesson was something that I always looked forward to. And so in that way, you know, playing music has just always been, you know, a pleasure in my life and something that I've truly have done for fun. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I just count my blessings every day that I'm able to do something in my life for a living, you know, that I would do for fun.
Anyway. Yeah, it's a great thing. Michael, I appreciate your call. I think you've got your guitar right there on your lap in Houston, Lyle. I wonder if you might. We've got all kinds of people online asking for things here. I don't know what you're in the mood to play or sing if you are, but If I Had a Boat has got a lot of attention here, or anything you like.
Well, I can play some of that. You tell me, Tom, if you'd like me to play some.
Well, here's Wendy says, if I had a boat, I'd sail it right into you, Lyle Lovett. Maybe that's a popular demand.
Well, certainly, I'd be happy to. The songs "One Way Gal" and "Keep It Clean" are both songs that I learned from a songwriter who grew up in Katy, Texas, and a wonderful guitar player named John Gramato. And that was another part of this record for me, was to give credit to to people like Eric Taylor and John Gramato, who were influences on me, and whose songs I play, and Jesse Winchester. You know, I learned all of those songs back in the 70s, back in 1978 or so, when I first started playing. And and there's a song that I was gonna play, but that John Gramato, maybe you can play it, that John Gramato wrote, that's on the record.
If I had a boat, I'd go out on the ocean. And if I had a pony, I'd ride him on my boat. And we could all together go out on the ocean. I set me up on my pony, on my boat. And if I were Roy Rogers, I'd sure not be single. I couldn't bring myself to marry him. Dale, it'd just be me and Jerk. We'd go riding through them movies. Then we'd buy a boat and on the sea we'd sail. And if I had a boat, I'd go out on the ocean. And if I had a pony, I'd ride him on my boat. And we could all together go out on the ocean. Set me up on my pony, on my boat. And now the mystery masked man was smart. He got himself a Tonto, 'cause Tonto did the dirty work for free. But Tonto, he was smarter. And one day said Kimasabe, kiss my ass, I bought a boat, I'm going out to sea. And if I had a boat, I'd go out on the ocean. And if I had a pony, I'd ride him on my boat. good all together and go out on the ocean. I set me up on my pony, on my boat. And if I were like lightning, I wouldn't need no sneakers. Well, I'd come and go whenever I would please. And I'd scare him by the shade tree, and I'd scare him by the light bulb. But would not scare my pony on my boat out on the sea. And if I had a boat, I'd go out on the ocean. And if I had a pony, I'd ride him on my boat. And we could all together go out on the ocean. I set me up on my pony on my boat. I set me up on my pony on my boat.
Well, hey, that's great. I love it. Live with us on Point, live from Houston. If I had a boat. We don't have time to get to your friend John Gramado's Dresses of Laces, but it's a great song on the album, Release Me. And, hey, you're out of that album contract. What's next? You're going to be fan dancing something all new?
Yeah, who knows? I really don't know. My obligation extends through the end of July, 5 months after the release of the record. And, you know, then I'll be able to start thinking about what to do next. And, you know, I'm just awfully grateful for this relationship that I've had with Curb Records and the Universal Music Group all these years, and I'm excited about the future.
Lyle Lovett, we look forward to the next chapter, and it's been really a pleasure talking with you today. Thanks so much for coming into Houston.
Tom, thank you very much for having me on.
New album is Release Me, the last track. You heard that Lutheran upbringing. Here's a hymn, Keep Us Steadfast, the last track on Lyle Lovett's Release Me. Thanks for joining us. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
This world.